He is back. The legendary Gary Yourofsky is back from retirement after 11 years of silence to sound the alarm on the dire lack of funding to animal sanctuaries. More specifically, Sasha Farm, a sanctuary he has volunteered for since around 1995, and one of the oldest, if not the oldest, vegan farm sanctuary in the world. You are listening to The Vegan Report. My name is Ryan, and today I gave you an exclusive interview with the man who has moved millions of hearts to embrace veganism. We discussed the burnout that led him to retirement, the behind the scenes of the best speech you will ever hear, effective altruism, and as the man who reportedly veganized 8% of Israel's population, his thoughts on the mass exodus of Jewish vegan activists from the movement. Support Sasha Farm now. Don't let them sink. Visit the episode notes for a link to their website. And thank you for tuning in every Tuesday as we go from adventure to adventure covering fascinating people and topics. Please share the podcast with your fellow vegans. Your support makes a real difference. Okay, so welcome, Gary, to the podcast. Thank you so much for having accepted my invitation.
What's happening? Thanks for bringing me on.
And I'm truly honored to have you on. I've had so many guests that told me that the reason why they became vegan was because of you, and more specifically because of that famous speech, you know, the most important speech you will ever hear. So it is really wonderful to have you on.
Well, again, thanks. And I'm amazed that that speech had such a far reach. I knew it was a great speech, though. I don't want to sound narcissistic, because to me, though, it was the only positive thing I've really given to this planet. So I am proud of it. But I am blushing when I hear about all the people around the world that have gone vegan or become a better activist because of my work. So I'm truly humbled by it.
Yeah, I had one guest describing herself as being a Yourofsky vegan.
Oh, that's cool. You know what I say? Because I'm in Germany right now. I was in Frankfurt and I'm in Cologne. And nearly everyone I'm running into is vegan from me. I call them Gary vegans. So she said the last name. Same thing.
So when I first, you know, heard the speech that you have recently given, the first one in 11 years, I was really happy about it. I guess lots of people were missing you. And I'm wondering, now that you're doing interviews, are you back from retirement?
It appears I am back. I don't know what the future holds. I don't foresee myself giving presentations like I used to. Right now, I'm feeling really comfortable and I'm being drawn to the podcast world to give interviews and to frankly talk about some old war stories, talk about things I went through. And I am back too on behalf of Sasha Farm. It's a place I've been going to for, man, almost 30 years, and they're really struggling now. Fundraising for me is a totally different game, not my bailiwick. It takes a special quality to do it, so I'm just being blunt about it. Please send money and help Sasha Farm. I don't know how else to say it, but they are struggling, and sanctuaries around the world are struggling too right now. So I was happy to give that speech. I felt a little choppy, but that's to be expected after 11 years. It was crazy because back in the day, especially my main speech that everybody knows, it's a 70-minute speech. It was all up here in my head. There are no notes anymore. In fact, at that time, I had different versions of that speech in my head. There were 5, 10, 15 different paragraphs I could use at each juncture. I was having a tough time memorizing the 5-minute speech. So how things change. But hey, I'm older. You lose a step sometimes. Tom Brady lost a step last year of his football career. Michael Jordan lost a step. So I just have to accept that lost a step, but I still got the words. I can still explain it. So yeah, we're going to flow with it.
It was an amazing speech. I really felt touched by it. And I was so happy that you brought up the issue of sanctuaries. And we will definitely, you know, cover that in this conversation. But first, you know, you made that decision to retire about 11 years ago, and I thought it was a really wise decision to, you know, be mindful of yourself and decide to stop when it was time to stop. Do you have any advice for the activists out there who are, you know, just in burnout mode right now, who are just need maybe that permission to take a step back?
I was stressed out beyond belief. My brain had melted. The last few years of giving lectures, when the arguments did arise, I no longer understood what we were arguing about. I was asking people to stop stealing somebody else's baby, stop raping somebody else, stop killing somebody else, stop viewing somebody else as your property. And then there was pushback, as we all get, and it just didn't make sense anymore. I had been going so hard at that time. I think it was 18 years in the trenches. You know the things that I did: 13 arrests, civil disobedience, direct action, the Mink liberation, jail time, 2,660 lectures. And mind you, I wasn't speaking to vegans. I wasn't speaking to crowds that were open armed. In fact, all my lectures started out like this, with people with crossed arms. Oh boy, here comes the crazy vegan. Oh, we got to listen to this shit. So I went into every room hated, and I took it for the animals. I'll bear the brunt. I told them I'd give them my life. And even though I'm still alive right now, I died inside a long time ago. I never really took much care of myself beyond the fact that I was working out every day at the gym, and I still do. But that, and it's not that I don't like that, but it's, people can be so superficial. I had to stay extra fit to make sure the crowd would look, especially the guys who would always come up to me and say, "Hey man, you're a pretty big vegan. I didn't know vegans could look that good." Like in my head, I'm going, "Man, I really have to get up at 5 a.m. to work out just so you'll listen to me more." But I will, and I did. I was always the last person I thought about. So think about yourself and de-stress. I don't want you to stop, though, until you have to. I mean, push it to the end, but stress is real. Stress can mess with your body. It can do damage. We all know that. If I can just say one more thing about the whole thinking, a lot of people misunderstand me and misread me, and they think, "Oh, Gary's narcissistic. Everything's got to be about him." When I did that Mink liberation and I busted into that farm and opened up those cages, the first time I thought about myself was 2 years later when the trial ended. They found me guilty, put me in a cell, and they closed the door. And I said, "Oh, Lord, what have I done? Where am I? Holy shit. You're in jail, man." That was the first time, because it was always them first. And we should always put the animals first. They deserve it. They're the ones being abused the most. Nothing was ever narcissistic that I did. I was a man of action. I couldn't stop. But it is important to take care of yourself. Do some more deep breathing, which is what I'm doing nowadays, which is what I did before this lecture, by the way. Lay down on the bed and breathe for a half an hour. It's always tough for me to breathe, though. It's still hard for me to relax and calm down, but it does wonders. I feel a lot better right now. Try to decompress. I don't know if everyone else has the crazy brain that I have. The brain I have is a curse and a blessing. The blessing is it came up with all those wonderful speeches and all these great arguments. But the curse was this brain would not let me sleep at night. That's why I came up with that stuff. As soon as I laid down, my brain would put me in a mock debate with Stephen Colbert, with Jon Stewart, with Sean Hannity. And my brain would say, "Well, what are you going to say when they say this?" And I'd say, "I just want to sleep. Wait, but they're going to say this, Gary. What are you going to say?" And then I go, "Oh, I guess I'm really good. Okay, I got it. Can I go to sleep now?" And then my brain would say, no, because then they're going to say this. And what are you going to say? So try to relax your brain somehow. I wish, in fact, if somebody knows how, please tell me, get a hold of me. I had insomnia. This will probably freak a lot of people out. for the last 25 years, and this will be my 29th year of veganism, I've only slept about 2 hours a night. During that whole lecture tour, when I was on the road for 12 and a half years, 2 hours a night. And mind you, I was rarely doing one lecture a day. It was usually two, a lot of times three, sometimes four, five, six, seven talks in one day, where I would start at 7:30 in the morning for that early morning class, and I wouldn't finish until 8 o'clock at night. Then I'd jump in the car and drive 8 hours to the next city to get ready for the morning class at 8 o'clock. I couldn't stop. I didn't want to stop. I take nothing back. I made a promise to the animals a long time ago again that I give my life for them, and I don't regret it, but I do wish somehow I would have taken better care of myself. So just watch out if you see signs of stress on your body. You see inflammation. Maybe your hands are hurting. Your legs are hurting. You can't relax. Take a quick break. Take a week off, do nothing. It's also hard for me though to really tell people to stop because I don't want people to stop. But I'll make this deal with you and everyone else. Everybody, at least put in the 18 years hardcore in the trenches that I put in, and then you could relax and take some time off. But push it till you can't push it anymore. Step back and take a break, and look after yourself.
Yeah, it is deceiving how, we all we see are the videos of your speeches. We don't see, what's happening beyond that. We don't see the pain. We don't see all the tears, blood, sweat you put in the work. And in those speeches, you look wonderful. Like, you're such a great communicator. I mean, I guess even your detractors would give in to that point that, you're amazing at communication. And if only we all had that skill, maybe we could advance the cause. But at least we can share your videos. We can share videos of your speeches.
And just so you know, it poured out of me so easily because it touched my heart. I saw those animals. I felt their pain. And I couldn't be silent. If you ask me right now, you start asking me questions. Oh, what about taxes? Are they too high? Or, what about this issue? I wouldn't know what to say. I can't speak like that about anything else. And all vegans are touched by the animals. That's why we embrace this lifestyle. So speak the same way, just to speak for them, like you would want to be spoken for if you were in their position. And just let it pour out, and don't be afraid to say things that people don't want to hear. I think that's what separated me a lot from others is don't be a politician. I think I said it in the speech too. I don't say what they need to hear, not what they want to hear. You'd be surprised. Most of my professors were not vegans. In fact, the majority of them were meat eaters. And the comment that I got from them was, man, I never heard anybody speak so openly and honestly about every issue that was asked, every question. I mean, this is what freaked people out is I got questions that were radical. Hey, do you support violence, or do you support breaking into a building and burning it down? And I gave them my honest answer, which a lot of people don't want to hear, but hey, it's how I felt. Why would I give your answer? It's my answer. It's genuine. It's real. And it's okay to disagree. You brought up my detractors a moment ago, and I would like to say something to them because it's okay to not agree with me on some issues. In fact, don't agree with me 100% of the time because I don't believe it anyways. You should not be agreeing with one person on this planet 100% of the time. But that doesn't mean you can't be a supporter, a friend, or a fan of that person. It means phrase it like, hey, not only Gary's position now on the human rights movement, but man, was he a hell of a vegan lecturer? In fact, he turned me vegan. This is what I find odd is a lot of my detractors are Gary vegans. Like the guy that showed you the light, you're mad at him now because he won't take a certain position on some issue that you feel strongly about. Well, hey, that's your issue. You feel strongly about it. So It's weird. I kind of went from really, really radical and wanting to infight, which I regret so much these days. Honestly, I take back the infighting. It never accomplished anything. People were always going to do things the way they wanted to do it. So nowadays, I'm actually a mediator. I'm trying to explain and bring peace amongst vegans. It's hard to do. Humans seem to be an incorrigible species when it comes to getting along, especially with people who believe the same things they believe. It's amazing to me that nobody can get along because of one disagreement on one issue, even though we agree maybe 80%, 90% of the time, people are looking at the 10% disagreement and saying, well, I can't be your friend anymore. Nah, I don't like that. I don't like your stance on that. Disagree. There's so many different issues out there. I mean, and it's not just one issue like the Israeli Palestinian issue. What about pro-life, pro-choice? What about pro-gun, anti-gun? How are we all going to always line up the same on all these issues? But the truth is, we need to line up on the main issue, the important issue, and that's animals don't deserve pain, don't deserve suffering, they don't deserve to be commodified. They deserve their freedom, life, liberty, and happiness, just like humans do. And that's what I chose to do, be a mouthpiece for them, not for anyone else.
Amen to all of that. I mean, truly, in this podcast, I've welcomed people from every horizon of life. I've welcomed pro-life vegans. I've welcomed pro-choice vegans. I've welcomed conservative vegans, radical left-wing vegans. And I don't see where the problem is. I really don't. I was, you know, people leave comments and send me messages, but I don't, it doesn't connect. I feel like we're all on the same team. We're team green. We're team, you know, pro animals. Why would we, you know, not unite despite our differences for that great cause? If there was one cause on this earth that would, you know, push us, inspire us to unite, it would be the animal cause.
I would think so too, and it's kind of heartbreaking. I mean, I was in Frankfurt doing that sanctuary lecture that everybody just saw, the first one. And there were people that were trying to get people not to join the fundraiser that I was putting on for Sasha Farm because, oh, Gary said this once and Gary did this once. Well, first of all, none of that money went to me. So technically, I would understand if the fundraiser, hey, let's give Gary some money for all the things he did. Okay, I actually can see you not wanting to give me money. I paid $800 of my own money on an airplane ticket to get down there just so I could raise a few thousand bucks for the sanctuary. It wasn't for me. So again, can't you say, well, I didn't like when Gary said this, but man, that money's going to Sasha Farm and Sasha Farm really needs it. They're in a bad state right now. So I'm going to give that money, which they didn't do. I'm like, please, by the way, if the detractors are listening, can you go to sashafarm.org and give a donation to them? I don't receive compensation from Sasha Farm. I'm doing this out of the kindness of my heart because I've been going there for 30 years and I would simply die if they ever went under. It would really break my heart. So please keep that sanctuary alive. You could even make a note, Gary sucks, but here's $100. Okay? Honestly, but again, can't we just get past the childish behavior of disagreeing on one issue and then not being somebody's friend anymore? It's again, I mean, listen, even your own partner, don't tell me that whoever your partner is in life, you're in 100% agreement. Because if you're telling me this, I think you're lying, or they're lying to you to make you think that they always agree. It can't happen. You can't like the same music. You can't like the same movies and the movie stars. You can't be aligned on every single issue on the planet. It can't happen. But what we can do is unite on behalf of the animals, and that's what we need to do. They're the most abused, most oppressed, most murdered. It's time to help them. I want to focus on them the most.
I completely agree. On that, I agree 100%.
By the way, you can agree on issues that I bring up 100%. But yeah, overall, there's going to be something I say that you're going to go, but whatever. Just go, okay. Move on to the next. I still can't get past this guy's vegan lecture. And by the way, the most important speech ever. I just want to clarify something. I did not title that. And so that maybe people think I'm narcissistic because I put that. That was somebody. Do you know that I had been lecturing from 2002 full time, 02 to 2010, when that speech at Georgia Tech was recorded, and never released one? At that time, I think there were about 1,500 lectures, because I was only focused on the students in every class. That was my focus. These 25 students, these 150 students, these 300 students, that was my goal. And I didn't want to share with others because I was in the zone. So a student that I want to give out a big shout out to right now, Nathan Black, a Georgia Tech student, sends me an email about 2 or 3 days before that lecture. And he says, "Gary, I heard you speak last year at Georgia Tech and you changed my life. Could I come to your speech in a couple days in Professor Klein's class? Could I record it and put it on YouTube?" It's like, yeah, I don't care, whatever. And keep in mind, too, I'm 54. I grew up without the internet. There was no internet when I grew up. There were no cell phones either. So that really didn't make sense to me either. So I said, yeah, show up. So he shows up before class. He wants to put a microphone on me. I said, no, I don't, no, I'm not playing this game. We're not doing this whole setup. Don't put lights and everything. And trust me, when I start speaking, I speak loud enough. You don't need a microphone. I'm like Rob Halford of Judas Priest when I'm singing. I don't need a microphone, or Pavarotti when I'm singing. Take the microphone away. So Nathan records it. And that was back when YouTube would only allow 10 minutes maximum. So the first time it was released, it was 6 or 7 parts. Then they've eventually started letting you put out whatever length you wanted. But he titled that the most important speech ever. And then somebody else titled it something else. I can't remember. There's another maybe best speech ever, something like that. I'm actually horrible at coming up with titles. Not my specialty. I'm great with speeches, but professors would often ask me, what should I title this? Like, oh, I don't know. There's no title. It's just a great speech. I don't know what to say. Call it Gary's ethical speech on veganism. So that's what they would put on the curriculum. They would actually show me the page, like Gary's ethical speech on veganism. I'm like, yeah, that's good. So just want to say that most important speech ever, not my title, although it very well might be.
Yes, definitely. Just yesterday, I was looking through the Instagram of George Martin, who is such a big fan of yours. And he was talking about how he used that speech to, promote veganism. And he did that with a couple of guys who seemed not interested. But then, he shared that video and they saved it on their phone. So, yeah, I mean, thank you. Thank you for that speech. And thank you for what you're... Yes.
I was going to say, oddly enough, I'm supposed to interview with George on Thursday. So you had brought him up. I'm like, wow, what a coincidence. Small world.
Yes. I know George. He appeared a few times on the podcast, and I really love him, appreciate him. And thank you for what you're doing with Sesha Farms. I would not, there's no reality where I would have heard about Sesha Farm if it was not for you. There are so many sanctuaries out there. And you used your popularity to promote this sanctuary since, back in 2015, I think. I've watched videos of you back in 2015 talking about...
I think I recorded about 6 or 7 videos there. But again, I've been going there since I went vegan in 96. And it has always been my personal Garden of Eden. It's a place where I did decompress over the years, even though I didn't do it enough. I went there and it was this different planet. It was because I was seeing animals, how they should be living peacefully, nobody taking anything from them, nobody wanting anything from them besides maybe a smooch or a little pet. But it was so loving to see cows and pigs and chickens and turkeys and the sheep and the goats, everybody just happy. And like, why can't it be like this? So again, it holds such a deep space in my heart. I want to let everybody know, because when Dorothy passed away, Dorothy ran that place wonderfully. The place would still be fine if Dorothy was alive. Unfortunately, her partner in life took over after, and I still love you, Monty, even though he's angry with me. But Monty, I don't understand what happened. He started thinking people weren't respecting him, but everybody adored him. I mean, him and Dorothy created this paradise for 40 years. But he started quarreling with people, and he asked me to come on the board of directors about 2 years ago, and I'm no longer on the board. I don't like the meetings and the discussions. I think people have heard me go off the meeting. Let's have a meeting about the discussion and the discussion about the meeting. Then we'll debate the meeting at the next discussion. I don't operate like that. But I wanted to hear everybody's side. I went and talked to the farm workers and Shara Jones, who is the animal care manager right now. And I talked to Monty, and I got everybody's complaints because remember I said I want to be a mediator now. I said, I'm going to bring peace here. Hold up. Let me hear everybody's story. And unfortunately, Monty was micromanaging a little too much. And I said, hey, buddy, I love you, but you really need to back off and let the animal care manager manage. That's why you hired her. She knows what she's doing. Shara can do what she wants to do. And he just wouldn't stop. And then he became angry at me. So this is also something I talked about. Here's disagreeing with me on one position. All of a sudden, we can't be friends. And he said, I can't believe you didn't take my side. We're friends. I said, well, if we're friends, and we are, we were dear friends of 20-some-odd years, shouldn't I be allowed to tell my friend when they're wrong? Said, you're wrong. And I said, and I was telling him to do what I did. You need to retire. You're stressed out, man. You're stressed out. Look at you lashing out at everybody. And it's unwarranted. Retire. I'll come over every morning after the gym. We'll smoke a joint. We'll laugh. We'll talk about old times. Let's just, you know. So anyways, the problem is he unfortunately is demanding that we purchase the property. And it's 50 acres. And it's a fair price. We check with real estate agents. But it's $675,000 for 50 acres in Manchester, Michigan. We don't have that kind of money. So we're behind the eight ball. Until we pay Monty off, we're not going to make it right now. And he took $250,000 out from the coffers. So that put us under $100,000. And it costs $250,000 every year just to get by. So I'm looking for a big donor to come and save the day. Right now, I'd be thrilled if somebody cut the $425,000 check that we still owe Monty. Be extra thrilled if they covered the $250,000 that we took out. But that's all we need is to be covered for the purchase, and then we're okay. Now, of course, we would like to have more money. We got grand ideas. We want to build studios so people can come and, you know, stay overnight, kind of doing what Farm Sanctuary does, something like that. And we want to upgrade. So more money needs to come in, but we'd be fine if we were just able to pay Monty off for the purchase of the property. And I just want to say again, I love you, Monty. Please come on back. I don't understand why you tossed me out and everybody else that you tossed out. We all love you. But please help Sasha Farm again. And again, not a fundraiser. I don't know how else to say. Just please help Sasha Farm. I know fundraisers are probably watching and listening going, he is a terrible fundraiser. I'm like, it's not my style. In fact, can I tell you a funny story about fundraising? The universe was good to me in many ways, bad to me in some other ways too. But when it came to my lecture tour, my activism, the universe was 100% behind me. It always brought me a wealthy donor to help me travel. It's not cheap. I needed to pay for airfare, hotels, rental cars, food, tolls. And somebody always came around and got a hold of me and said, wait a second, Gary, are you speaking in schools, in classes? How can I help? I said, well, I could use somebody to help cover the cost. And I'd like to live. And I'm a minimalist. I live meagerly. So what I would ask for, and I'm open and honest about it, I asked for $64,000 a year. And 32 was to travel, 32 so I can live. And the universe always brought me somebody. But around 2006, I actually was looking for somebody. And the universe wasn't right on time, but came through, but wasn't right on time. And I couldn't find anybody. So I'm racking my brain. Who can I reach out to? So I had a friend named Mitch who had a vegan fast food joint in San Diego. And he had gotten me a $5,000 donation a couple of years earlier. So I get a hold of Mitch. I say, "Hey, buddy, can you give me Rich's contact info, the guy that gave 5,000?" He said, "Yeah, but why?" I said, "Well, I'm going to ask him for 64." He said, "Well, first of all, I'm amazed he gave you five. He's probably not going to go that high." I said, "Well, would you mind if I ask? He's your friend." He goes, "No, go ahead, ask him." So this is my email to Rich. Paraphrasing, but almost verbatim. "Hey, Rich, it's Gary Yourofsky. You gave me 5,000 bucks a couple years ago. I'm not even sure I said thank you. Thank you. Would you mind giving me 64,000 this year?" So I'm not a schmoozer. I just straight to the point. He emails me back. "Would it be okay if we talked about this a little more?" I said, "Yeah, sure. I don't even know where you're at. Where do you live?" He says, "San Francisco." I said, "Oh, next month I'm at St. Mary's College in Moraga. It's about 30 minutes, 60 minutes from Frisco." And I said, "Well, why don't we go out to lunch or dinner?" He said, "Yeah, sounds great." So we met at Cafe Gratitude. It's another funny part to the story. And just so you know, most of my activism has a comical aspect to it. So I meet Rich at the restaurant, sit down, introduce each other, shake hands, and he proceeds to tell me a story about some foie gras that he had just eaten. I'm a little taken aback, of course. And in my head, you got to understand what's going on in my crazy brain. I'm like, "Go off on him. Wait a second. What? Wait, no. He's telling you a corny dad joke. Just wait for the punchline. Don't yell at him, Gary. He might give you money." Wait a second. So he keeps telling me, and it was horrible. And I sent it back, and I'm getting more confused because I'm not hearing a joke format, and there's no punchline that seems to be coming. And I'm an open guy. I wear my heart on my sleeve. You know how I feel. I wear it on my face. So he starts to see my face becoming distraught. And he says, "Oh, Gary, did you think I was vegan?" "Well, yeah. Well, why are we here?" I said, "Well, I'm not vegan." Confused? He said, "But I think you got the best speech I ever heard in my life, and I think everybody should hear it. I'm just not ready to become vegan yet. I'll be there one day. Yes, I'll give you money." What? It was so bizarre what transpired. And if people wondered why I did engage in infighting and I was harsh on people, which I do regret, it's because at that time the animal rights movement was turning me down to fund me, and I could not understand. "Oh, Gary, you're too radical. I can't give you money." Too radical? If I'm so radical, why are the professors bringing me into their classrooms? You're making a judgment and it's false. If I was too radical, I wouldn't have 250 talks lined up this year. But no one in the movement would give me money. But the foie gras eater from San Francisco saved the only vegan lecture tour on the planet, not only for a year, for 3 years. Rich, thank you so much for the 192,000 that you donated so people could hear this lecture. In fact, he was so kind on the way out. 8 months before the year ended, he said, "Hey, Gary, I don't think I'm going to fund you after this year. Wanted to give you a heads up so you can find something else." And I said, "Wow, man, and no one even gave me a warning." Well, I just got cut off instantly. So you were really gracious. The only rule that I had, it was, I said, "Rich, because you're not vegan, you have zero say in what I say, how I say, where I say it, and what I do. Because I will take meat eating money. I'd take money from McDonald's if there were no strings attached, just to be clear. So there's no strings attached to this, and you're doing this out of the generosity of your heart. I will accept it." He said, "I agree. This is all yours." And then I guess the cute part was the following day, I had my lecture at St. Mary's. I said, "Why don't you come and check out one of the live talks?" So he shows up. It was one of those magical moments where every single student became vegan. And they all stood up at the end of the class in a line to shake my hand or give me a hug on the way out and say something like, "Oh, Gary, you changed my life. I can't believe I missed this. I didn't know about this. I'm so sorry." And as Rich is in the back, I'm kind of eyeballing him, and I mouth to him, "All the time. All the time, just like this." And he's got smiling. And just so everybody knows, man, out of let's say on average, I think I was doing 200 lectures every year. It was amazing that I only had about 15 that turned into a Jerry Springer show. 15 out of 200, 185 lectures where everybody took something away. I'm not saying I turned all those people vegan, but what I'm saying is no arguments, no divisiveness, nothing but a pleasant Q&A asking for more information. So that ratio, and this is some of the people in the movement got upset because of those 15 talks that, by the way, I didn't start the Jerry Springer show. I did finish it, but I was finishing it on behalf of the animals. I went into that classroom willing to give everyone a chance. I mean, when everybody started like this too at the beginning of the talk, I heard all the whispers. I had supersonic hearing back then. And I heard them, man, the fucking vegans here. Oh, man, we got to listen to that vegan shit again. I should have brought a hamburger. Should have brought my deer head. But I never got mad because I remember when I wasn't vegan. I said, you know what? I was probably saying the same dumb shit too. So I never got mad. And it actually fired me up to become more focused and to reach them. I said, I am going to break them down. And Ryan, I got to tell you, one of the coolest things that I got to see, and a few people along the way, mind you, I was on the road alone most of the time. And there were times I wish other people were able to see it. But I got to see change happen in front of my face. And it started with the arms crossed, scowl on their face, little scowl. And then about 10 minutes in, the arms came undone. So, well, look at this. All right, they're starting to listen. And then I always dropped a 5-minute slaughterhouse video about 12 to 15 minutes into the speech. Now, that usually broke everybody down. I mean, if you're alive and you have a conscience and a heart, it would have to do something to you. So now, though, a lot of times one arm went above the head like this. Now, I talked to some friends who were psychology majors, and they always said, you know, that's like a submissive position. But they were actually saying, okay, all right, I'm listening. And then they got harsh stuff too. You heard the speech. It was eloquent, but it was harsh, right? It was the truth is harsh. And I patterned my activism style, my speaking style, after two people, Malcolm X, early Malcolm X, and George Carlin, the brilliant philosopher comedian. So my speech, if you look at it again and examine it, it's really a militant comedy roast, because I would push people to the edge, especially after that video, because I was riled up. Mind you, I didn't leave the classroom when the video was on. I stood there and watched it. So I had to watch that video 2,660 times myself. But I did it because it fired me up and it made me say, you gotta explain this to them on behalf of these animals. So after that, you know, it was always something really harsh where I push them right to the edge, but then I bring them back with some humor. Like, you guys are bird ass fetishes, right? All you guys want to do is eat something that comes out of a bird's ass, eggs. You want to shove stuffing into a bird's ass on Thanksgiving. You guys squeeze cow titties. You engage in bestiality. You guys. Yeah, so they start giggling and laughing because there's truth in sarcasm, which I learned from George Carlin. So I would push them to the edge and then use some humor, like the comedy roast that I actually love watching still to this day. It was a back and forth where it really worked. And it was natural. I mean, it wasn't, again, I didn't plan much. I just did it. And then after I did something or said something, then I analyzed it. And that's some advice I'd give to people. Don't sit at that board table too long. You're planning too much and not doing. Do it. Figure it out as you go along, and then figure it out after what you can tighten up. I talk about a lot of the success stories with my speeches, but I'm not telling you about the things I said that didn't work. If I said something that it didn't really work, afterward I'm saying, maybe I shouldn't have said it like that. I want to say it this way. That happened to me too. It's just over the years, I perfected it down to that Georgia Tech speech. I'm like, I got it now. This is the message. This will resonate. People will listen. People will change. And who knows how many people. I mean, it's got to be a couple hundred thousand. Some people claim it's millions. And if you think about the domino effect, so I would get thousands of emails that said something like, I saw you at my class last week at University of Akron, changed my life. And I went home and I told my sister, my brother, my mom, my dad, my boyfriend, my girlfriend, my friends, they all became vegan, or some of them became, like, there's a domino effect through that speech. who knows how many. And then I want to cover so much, right? I'm sorry, I'm so talkative when people ask me about this stuff. But for my detractors too, just keep that in mind, that if I was the one that made you see the light, don't forget about that because you didn't like something else I said. Share the speech, pass it on. You can share it with a disclaimer too. By the way, the guy feels like this about this issue, but man, he really laid it out there. Share that speech still. It's amazing. It's almost like, even though I was retired for the last 10, 11 years, I was still pretty damn active. I'm sitting on my couch, smoking a joint, relaxing, finally going, you know what? I think I still turn a bunch of people vegan today. It's crazy. I put in so much work that work lives on. It's stunning. It's stunning to me that, and there were times I didn't know if people were really listening. I didn't know. I'm like, are people hearing me in the movement? Are they sharing this? I don't know. But that's why I went solo. I said, I'm just going to do whatever I can do. And that's a good piece of advice too. Sometimes you have to do it yourself. You want something done right. You don't have to rely on other people. I know it's nice to have people present, but like early on in the 90s, when I was doing protests, sometimes I was by myself and I was getting front page on the Detroit News, Detroit Free Press. I was getting on the Channel 2, Channel 4, Channel 7 news by myself or with my right-hand woman, Laura Rogers. I mean, it's nice to have 50, 100, maybe 1,000 people or 10,000. Yeah, that'd be wonderful. But it's not a requirement as long as you're out there sharing your soul, spilling your soul to the people, talking like the animals will want you to talk and saying the right things. Learn your arguments, say it properly, and you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised. Oh, and for the detractors, actually, I was going to say, a lot of times they would email me, I listen to Earthling Ed's speech, and I listen to Joey Carbstrong, and I think they're way better than you, and they're going to reach more people. As if that was an insult. I hope Ed, and I hope Joey, and I hope Paul Bashir, and I hope Nir Rosenfeld, and I hope all the people that I inspired reach more than me. Not an insult, because the sign of a good teacher is that they are proud when their students become stronger, wiser, and more effective than they are. I didn't change the entire world. So I hope they do. You act like I would be upset if all the animals were liberated because of Paul and Joey and Ed. I'd be the first ones to go up and give them a hug and put them on my shoulder. You go, we did it. You guys did it. I might have started it, but thank you for finishing it. So say what you want to say. I wish people would just think a little deeper and understand me a little more. And maybe they're going to learn a little more about Gary the person and not Gary the activist through this and through all the upcoming podcasts. Because I do want to share. I don't mind sharing some more personal stuff that I really didn't share over the year. And I hope listening to me talk now does make you even rethink. How come I'm calling Gary a terrorist and a maniac? I really do it. Are you afraid of me right now? I mean, I do sound like
no,
a maniac.
Not at all.
Paul Bashir once visited me in Michigan, and his comment was, "You are the nicest misanthrope I've ever seen in my life." And because people don't understand being a misanthrope, I just don't like our species. I think our species is a scourge. Individually, I enjoy most people. At the gym I work out at back home, LA Fitness, in Royal Oak, you should see me walk in the gym. I'm like, Adrian, hey, what's up? Hey, what's up, Nate? Hey, what's up, Mike? Hey, hey, Mr. Ed. I know everybody at the gym. They know me. Hey, Gary, how you doing? I'm running over and helping people. There's somebody that's older that can't get the weights off. I'm like, hey, let me get that for you. It's not like because I'm a misanthrope. I'm tripping old people and I'm throwing rocks at kids on a playground. That's not what being a misanthrope is. Please understand before you condemn. It just means that our species, there's something wrong with our species and I don't like it. And why should I? After 29 years of seeing everything that I've seen, and by the way, I'm probably older than most of the people that are my detractors. I've been around. I've seen it all. I went to rural America. I've confronted people. I've seen too much. And there's not much hope left in me these days. Not trying to discourage or break people's hearts. Again, my feelings. I don't know if how much of the difference that we can truly make, because our species is so selfish and so stubborn. But again, I hope everybody proves me wrong and says, Gary, you know what, though? You might have been right on a lot of things, but you were dead wrong. And we got the animals their freedom. I hope I'm 100% wrong on this issue.
Well, I do appreciate very much your bluntness. Thinking about it, I think all of my friends are very blunt, and I just love it. I love the honesty. I'm like, you know, trying to decipher what people are really thinking is not, you know, I'm not really good at it. So I want to have open conversations, and that's what I value. And now I understand why I love your speeches, because I've watched hours of George Carlin, and definitely there is some of that in your speeches.
By the way, thanks for getting it. Now, everybody that now if you go and look back, especially the listing, when I do the listing of things, that's a George Carlin thing. He's the best lister I've ever heard. He'll run down this whole list. I'm like, I like that. I'm going to start doing it. And this and that. Even when I say cows, pigs, chickens, turkeys, sheep, and goats, like, that's a Carlin flow that I absolutely love. And every bit of humor that I used, here's some inside information. Before I said it, and it was instant. That's how crazy my brain is. I could analyze something within 1 second. I'd say, would George think this is funny and cute? And my brain would say, hell yeah, use that. Or sometimes be like, no, he doesn't. And I would pass on it. But George, that's who I always went to know if I should be sarcastically truthful in a certain situation.
Yeah, if only he was around. What I would give to go and watch one of his shows. I want to get back quickly to the sanctuaries issue. And then one more question for you. Gary, so you mentioned in your latest speech, how farmed sanctuaries are, or how there are people in the animal rights movement that encourage others not to give to animal sanctuaries. And I've seen that, I've experienced that, and we're not the only ones having noticed that. I found an article from Karen Davis, who was the founder of United Poultry Concerns. It's called "Are Farmed Animal Sanctuaries at Risk?" And she goes in depth, you know, talking about this issue. Now, why?
She was a great warrior for the animals.
Yes.
God rest her soul.
Yes. And so I guess the question is, why are they discouraging vegans to donate to animal sanctuaries?
So here's the issue as I see it. So when I started doing lecturing full time and deciding that education was the best way, imagine there's a pie chart, as you should put out whenever you're looking at an issue. To me, the pie chart was 2% education and way too much protesting, way too much lobbying, way too much media interviews, and I fought like hell to convince people that education needs to be 80%, maybe 90%. I didn't mean 100% because I didn't want to lock everything else out. Everything does have its place. It just needs to be in the proper percentile. So a lot of people went that far in education where they just want to make it all education and then a little advertising, which is strong and good. I would never get rid of that. A little direct action, I think, is solid. There's a lot of risks, though, involved and jail time, and who knows what can happen there. So too many people, I think the term that is being bandied about is effective altruism. I don't find it to be effective nor altruistic, because we murder billions of animals every year, and you're telling me we can't take care of a couple thousand that escaped? A couple thousand made it out of the houses of slaughter that we've constructed all over this planet? And there's people going, well, I don't know, man, cows live till they're 20. That's 20 years worth of hay and medical care. Nah. Again, like I said in the speech, they deserve everything. I don't care how much it costs. Are you kidding me? So people are not looking at this clearly. Again, you can put most of your investment into an education-based format. Yeah, who are you talking to? I would recommend that. But don't forget about the animals at the sanctuary. don't forget about not only Sasha Farm, but all the other sanctuaries around the planet that are struggling because people are pulling back their funding. Start sending those 10s and 20s to them. Start sending those 50s and 100s. They need it the most. These animals deserve so much. And if you could, and if you feel otherwise, go to a sanctuary one last time. You look that cow in the eye and you tell that cow, I'm sorry, you can't have my 20 bucks. You're too expensive. I couldn't even fathom. I couldn't even get the words out of my mouth looking at what we've done to their species. We kill 1 billion cows on the planet. There's 25 or 30 living at Sasha, and we can't come up with the money to make sure they're okay, they're safe, they got a nice place to stay. I find it to be outrageous, which is why this is what brought me back. This, I couldn't take it anymore. I kept hearing that the sanctuaries are struggling. Everyone's pulling their funding. Nobody wants to help. I don't even get it. Again, you can make it the smaller portion on the pie chart. Don't forget about it. Don't eliminate it. Nothing should be 100%. So education, 80 to 90. And make sure there's sanctuaries. Make sure there's media interviews. Make sure there's advertising, which is essential. And make sure those other things still have at least a percentage in that pie chart.
Definitely. And I should have said that sooner, but I'm actually a fundraiser by profession. And
you're probably giggling like, this guy is the worst fundraiser I've ever heard, but man.
No, no, you're actually great at it. You're actually great at it. And
I just blogged about it.
you're inspiring. And the thing about effective altruism is when does it get, you know, effective? Maybe an organization won't convince lots of people to become vegan or make that much of an impact in their environment for a couple of years, for 5 years. They build themselves up, and then maybe they take off. But if you don't give them that time to build themselves up, to if you don't invest in that, then how are we going to move forward? And I do believe that sanctuaries are excellent tools to turn people vegan. I always say, the experience, give them the experience of becoming vegan, bring them to a vegan festival, bring them, to a sanctuary, and let's do a tour of the sanctuary. Those are amazing experiences that, will convince them to consider veganism.
Think about how many times most people have actually ever petted a chicken, turkey, a cow, or a pig. If you did, you were probably a kid and you don't even remember it anymore. So you know how many people I would bring locally in Michigan when I had them on the edge, almost there? I said, what are you doing Saturday? Because you're coming with me. I want you to pet this pig and look him right in the eye and tell me that you're not going to become vegan. And I brought people there, and that's all. That was the final push that they needed. Like, oh my God. I even brought one guy there who didn't believe when he heard the animal noises. He said, I thought they made that up just for cartoons. That's how chickens and turkeys really sound? Oh my God. Like, we don't even know these animals. So we need these sanctuaries. And I said it in the speech. I do want to be clear. A lot of them are doing tours and doing education-based activism as part of it. And that's fabulous. Hey, anytime you can mix the two, that's wonderful. But even if they aren't, those animals still deserve everything. They still deserve a happy place to stay just because of what we've done to their species. We should be embarrassed. We should feel like shit for what we've done to them. And we should want to do everything on their behalf from here on out.
And it's not about us, it's not about what we get from this situation. It's really all about them here. Okay, one last question I really wanted to bring, and that is the anti-Semitism that we have witnessed in the past few years now in the vegan community. I found an article attributing the fact that you turned about percent, I think, of the Israeli population to veganism.
The most vegan-friendly place on the planet. I can't even understand this.
And that's how I understood, you know, and looked at Israel, you know, since what you...
They went out of their way to hear my speeches. They were renting out. When I first got there, I wasn't involved in arranging the talks. I just told them, make sure they're not vegans. Just get me some venues and point me towards the stage and let me go. And when I got there, like, okay, we rented out a bar. That was my first lecture. I said, a bar? What do you mean a bar? We rented out a bar and we're going to do the lecture there. I'm like, who's going to come to a bar? I get there. I literally had to fight through the crowd to get to the stage. 220 people packed house. In fact, there were 300 people outside who couldn't get in. They set up a screen in the streets. Non-vegans came to hear the message, and people are getting upset with Israel because of their issues that are going on with Hamas. And let me explain something about hostage taking, which is why I'm really opposed to the Palestinian side. I don't support anybody who takes hostages, because think about who takes hostages. Bank robbers, drug cartels, domestic abusers. And Hamas. Okay, that's not a tactic. I got news. If some radical animal rights person went and took hostages, I wouldn't support that either. That's not a valid tactic at all. And let me throw this out there. Let's say, for argument's sake, that I did decide to take hostages myself. Let's say I went and kidnapped the wives of a bunch of vivisectionists. Let's say I kidnapped the husbands of a bunch of hunters. Let's say I had these people and I was threatening them. And I was demanding something. Do you know all it would take was for the opposition to go kill one animal, shoot one rat in the head, and I'd say, okay, wait, stop, I'm sorry, okay, I'm coming out, hands up, everybody's out. That's how much I love and care about the animals. You'd only have to shoot one to make me stop. Look what Hamas is doing to their own people that they claim to care about. They are not, all they have to do is release those hostages and everything stops. And I got news for you. Things were actually going pretty well with Israel and Palestine before the October 7th massacres. I believe 160,000 to 200,000 Palestinians had work visas. They were getting along pretty well. Of course, these people have always quarreled with each other. Leave it to humans. Nobody can get along. Blacks and whites, Jews and Muslims, men and women. It's not just them, everybody. Nobody gets... Black Republicans, I've noticed, and Black Democrats don't get along anymore. They no longer share their blackness because they hate the politics so much. So it's vegans don't get along. So don't act like this is some weird, bizarre issue. This is a human issue. But things were pretty well, and that action was outrageous. Again, not a valid action that they went and shot people at a music festival. And by the way, from what I hear, it was a liberal music festival. I'd have to say most of those people were probably on the side of the Palestinians. Say, yes, let's get this second state going. So the whole thing is outrageous, first of all, that people are on the wrong side. But as I stated earlier, we can disagree on issues. We can disagree on pro-life, pro-choice. We can disagree on pro-gun, anti-gun. I'm firmly on the side of Israel. I think they're right. And I think if the hostages were released, things would drastically change for the Palestinians. But nobody should be blaming anybody besides Hamas. This is them. And here's something that I do want to point out, because it's really bizarre. You see people, gay people walking around with signs that says queers for Hamas or queers for Palestinians. They're not for queers. Why are you standing up for somebody? The radical Muslim nations are 100% anti-gay, 100% anti-trans, 100% anti-woman, 100% anti-black. And then you have black people and trans people and gay people and women standing up for these people who won't stand up for you. But you can go to Israel. You can be publicly gay as long as you want. You can do a year-round pride fest if you wanted to, a year-round trans fest, and Israel would welcome you openly. So I don't understand from that point of view why people wouldn't be on Israel's side. Here's something else I look at when I like to try to decide and figure out which issues have the proper side. If Russia, China, and North Korea are on one side, you can pretty much take the other side. Okay, these also are not nations that are liberal and open either. I do believe Russia has criminalized gayness or imprisons gay people too. So I don't understand this, all these gay people standing up for a bunch of people that would kill them if they had the chance. And think about this for the Americans too. When Iran, if they ever get a nuclear weapon and they decide to destroy the great Satan that is America in their eyes, do you think there's a bomb that's going to exclude the left-wing people and the gay people and the trans people? Everyone's going down. There's no way this regime should be having a nuclear weapon. They cannot be trusted with it. So just re-examine some issues deeply and look at that Israeli thing a little closer and realize which side actually has the side of liberalism on their side, because the majority of all these people opposing them are liberals, left wingers. And just for the record, I don't really side with liberalism or conservatism. I see some value in both issues that they put forth. That's something else, back to what I said earlier about agreeing with somebody 100% of the time. I find both sides to be ridiculous when they're always agreeing with themselves. Republicans are never wrong. Democrats are never wrong. Get out of here. You guys got some things that are right, some things that are wrong. They got some. Get together, work it out, and say, you know what? You guys are really good on that topic. We're really good on this topic. Why don't we handle this? You handle that and work together. But again, God forbid humans should ever work together. We seem to be an incorrigible species when it comes to unity and togetherness.
Yeah, weirdly enough, it's the most unpopular position to be for unity.
God, yeah, I don't understand it either. But we're everyone's so worked up about everything. As soon as somebody says something they don't like, they forget about. And by the way, when it comes to my detractors too, think about all the speeches I gave, all the interviews I gave. I guess it's probably fair to say I literally spoke a million words. Maybe more, but let's just round it off at a million. So what, there's 5,000 words that I said that you didn't like, and you just eliminate the 900,000 words don't mean anything to you anymore. It's those 5,000. I can't stand that 5,000 words. Let it go.
I see it, it's, you know, the rule of the games. If you have a position and you want others to adhere to your position, then you should also allow counter positions to be heard so that your position will also be heard. And, you know, that's the market of ideas. I mean, those were the understood rules of the game a minute ago. And I feel like this has changed. But going back to the...
Hang on, I want to say one more thing too.
Yes.
I don't like war. Most people don't. I don't know anybody that really does. Here's where I also stand on this issue. Part of me doesn't even care right now who's right or who's wrong. I want to know who's going to have the courage to walk across that line with their hands out or their arms open and say, you know what? I'm sorry. Can we just start over already? We've been going at it for thousands of years. Can we just stop? That's what I want to see. When are we going to apologize to each other and live together? And of course, bring the animals into this too. Let's not forget, as people claim, oh, it's Israeli land. Oh, it's Palestinian land. It's the animals' land. You want to get technical from the animal rights radical here? All land was stolen from the animals. We're all living on stolen land. This was theirs. We're all thieves, all of us. So how deep do you want to go into this? Because I'm still right on this. It belongs to the animals, and we should all be living on it peacefully. It's not one, it's not the other. It should be everybody's. Can't we just live in peace? But again, this is what led to the stress. It was all this fighting. Nobody gets along. And listen, again, I went into those classrooms. I didn't want to fight, never did. Never did, wanted to teach. I said, man, I got something. You wait till you hear what I got to tell you. You're going to get it. And those that listen with an open mind did get it. The ones that didn't never gave me a chance, never gave the message a chance.
you know, when I look at what this has done, you know, getting involved in this conflict and this political talk, we've lost so many vegan activist Jews. You know, they just decided to go away, and for good reasons, you know, to protect themselves and their sanity and their safety. But this is harming animals the most. You know, this is funding that we have lost. This is intellect that we have lost. All of that for a great cause.
Our forces have been depleted. We've lost warriors. And again, this is why I say we need to focus on the animals anyway. Here's something I want you to think about to prove my point a little more. I actually believe now that human rights is the main impediment to the advancement of animal rights. Why? Because when you talk about humans, guess who doesn't get talked about? We don't talk about cows having their babies stolen, pigs having their testicles ripped out, the baby ones. We don't talk about dehorning. We don't talk about, you know, all this cruelty and the houses of slaughter and slicing their heads off. That needs to be the focus, because if you look at the human rights side, you ever hear the human rights people speaking about cows having their babies stolen on dairy farms? Of course not. Why? Because then you don't get to talk about humans. So why are you giving something to a group of people that never give it back? I get right and wrong. I get injustice. I know humans deserve life and liberty and happiness. But the animals deserve it more and need it more. They're the ones being forgotten about, and we need to focus on them. I think there was a big, huge pride protest yesterday in Budapest. I mean, I saw a photo. It must have been 100,000 people came out. You know, show me some signs about people who came out for Pride Fest that were talking about what the animals were going through. But yeah, we got vegans at vegan protests, at animal rights protests, holding up signs, free Palestine, or gay rights, or trans rights. What? They don't do it for us. Stop doing it for them. And it's not the noble route. We are being taken advantage of by the human rights people. They're playing us. Stop. This is why. And if you look at my old speeches, I actually did talk about racism, sexism, heterosexism. I made examples. I talked about, and over the years, I started seeing that they were never doing it for the animals. And I said, no, why do we keep helping them out? Why do we keep speaking out for their causes, but they won't help ours? And I think I did a video when COVID came out where I talked about, if we ever sat down at the table of peace, every issue, do you know who would not be represented? The animals. Because you couldn't sit at that table of peace and say you were opposed to gay marriage. You'd be tossed out. But you can sit there with cow skin shoes. You can sit there and say, if the meeting went on long enough, you could bring a hamburger and eat it. Look how they are playing us and ignoring the worst form of injustice on this planet. I want to ask all the vegans and all the animal rights people, keep your eyes on the prize. Focus on the animals and the animals only. This is where your voice is needed.
You know, I started this podcast. At first, I wanted to shed light on social issues that, you know, deserved more attention. And then I thought, what am I doing? Why am I not using my communication skills to focus on animals? If I'm not the one doing that, who else? You know, all of those issues I'm going to tackle in my podcast, those social issues, they have like so many organizations and funding and people behind them, even though, you know, they're struggling, but not struggling as much as the animal cause. And I can't just, you know, I need to be the one who prioritizes this cause. If I'm not, then who else?
I agree wholeheartedly, my man. Well said. Well said.
So, Gary, I want to be respectful of your time.
I'm actually getting quite hungry, so perfect. Thank you for wrapping up. It's dinner time.
Once again, thank you so much. As this movement is maybe at its weakest point, we see you come back, and I will take that as a good omen. I do think that you're going to do a lot more good. And thank you. Thank you so much for all of your good work, for all of these years. Thank you for what you're doing for Sesheform, for your speeches, and for having accepted my invitation.
Thank you so much for having me on. Keep in mind, sashafarm.org. And you are a wonderful speaker. This was a pleasure. Anytime you want me back, man, we could set this up again. End of the year sometime. I really enjoyed this. And there's always a lot more to talk about. Keep in mind, I got war stories that nobody knows about. Crazy things. So you let me know, Ryan, whenever. I appreciate it. And thank you very much.
Definitely, you are welcome, and I will take you on this offer. I'm not afraid.
Okay. I mean,
I'm welcome to...
Ready, though. They're crazy stories. They're not listening. They're not like, oh, everybody fawned and you know, went vegan and said, oh, you're the greatest. I got crazy cop confrontations when I was radical in the diocese. They're just insane things as I trudged through the path of activism to find my way into the classroom. I did a lot of crazy things.
I love
and always with a comical aspect too.
I love those stories. I live for them. I have the ALF, you know, book. What is it called? I forget the name, but the completion of all of those stunts they've done. And I actually, you know, recorded two episodes with Dr. Vlasak about the ALF action. So yeah, this podcast is open to those stories.
Jerry's one of my boys. I love you, Jerry. I've known him for a long time.
Yeah, I think
I got a crazy story with Jerry next time. Remind me to tell you about the craziest thing. Maybe it was me and Jerry. Insane.
Definitely. I love Jerry. So once again, thank you so much, Gary. Thank you everyone for listening. I kindly invite you to share this podcast with the vegans you know. Let's encourage more people to take action. Again, thank you so much for caring, and I will see you next Tuesday for a new episode.